huddle up.
66 HitchX Vegas Flair. I'm one ready.
It's time to break down the boldest plays.
Let's go, baby! Boom!
Hardest hits. Woo! And the craziest stories from around the NFL.
Touchdown, Tampa Bay! Fire the cannons!
This is Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
It's officially week zero, week for the NFL, but week one for college football. We are back. We actually have football to react to. How about that? We were able to watch a little bit yesterday with a packed week one slate. You even got some couple games today. You got South Carolina 3:30 against Virginia Tech, and then you got Miami Notre Dame at Hard Rock Stadium. Tonight is the nightcap, 7:30 on ABC. And you still got a Monday night game, too. So college football dominating the weekend with the NFL starting on Thursday with the Eagles and the Cowboys. Lots to do, a lot of fun to be had. Next hour right here on ESPN 106.3. It's Colin Russo. We got Kate Chumson behind the glass at the City Play Studios. It's Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3. Now that we are back in the swing of things in football season, go get started on the Hard Rock Bet app. Go down today on the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, because if you deposit just $5 on the Hard Rock Bet app, you get $150 in bonus bets that you could use freely. That's right. 5 into 150 on the Hard Rock Bet app. You could try it today. You got baseball entering the last month of the season as well, so you could bet player props, parlays, you name it, the whole thing there. The NFL with it starting on Thursday, get those futures in, because I got screwed because I was going to take that Packer over 9.5 wins, and all of a sudden they trade for Micah Parsons and all the odds change in Hard Rock Bet. I got screwed there because I was not proactive enough to make that pick, and now I'm going to have to take it with worse odds. Don't make the same mistake I did. Go get started on the Hard Rock Bet app and check out the Discover page. See what other users are putting together. You can tag along in their parlays, their picks, their promo boosts, their profit boosts. Hit it all. It's all right there in front of you. It's an easy interface. Hard Rock Bet offered by the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Must be 21 plus. Physically present in Florida. The wager terms and conditions apply. Consider by gambling. Call 1-888. Admit it. Of the slate yesterday, we had a full slate and classic college football. Great slate. Not every game was even remotely close to good because there's a lot of bye games. You know, a lot of, you know, Georgia playing Marshalls. But of the games that did matter, the big one, the big surprise of it all, was Florida State getting back into the thick of things against Alabama. Florida State, who won 31-17. Florida State, who was at home. Florida State was coming off a two-win season with Mike Norvell basically handing back some of his salary to offset some of the blowback from the fans. And the same Florida State, mind you, who was talking crap about Alabama, Thomas Castellanos, the new transfer quarterback from Boston College, basically talking crap about Alabama, saying, you know, they're not the same with Nick Saban. And everybody's like, oh, Alabama, minus 13.5 point favorites Alabama was going into the game. And dare I say, maybe Florida State was onto something. Maybe Thomas Castellanos was onto something, that Nick Saban is no longer there to save them. Alabama's lost three of their last four games. They start 0-1. They were the number 8 ranked team. Florida State was unranked. And one of the great wins, contextually, timing-wise, that Florida State's had in years. In years. And beating Alabama, basically the icing on the cake, showing that Alabama's no longer that immortal in college football. Alabama's no longer the Titan. Florida State doing that while also sort of keeping their head above water. Because, you know, two-win season, if Florida State got killed last night, 31-14... we would be having very different conversations about the vindication of head coach Mike Norvell. But the fact that they were able to win that, I came into the season, admittedly, that Florida State needs to go seven wins. A seven-win season, bowl eligibility. I think a Florida State fan has to be happy because it's impossible to go from, you know, 13-0 to 2-10 and then go right back up to 10 wins. Not only did Florida State, that defense, look excellent yesterday, that Florida State team, their entire outlook of the season changed with just one game. Now Florida State, who has three easy games, and then they got Miami coming up in about 4 weeks, their whole season has changed. Whole season has changed. Not going to be a threat in the ACC, but like that team is going to be a problem. Not saying they're going to be the best team in the country, but that team's not going to win seven games. That team can be... That could be a 9-win team. That could be a 10-win team. That's just an initial reaction. Maybe I'm wrong on this. Maybe Alabama's so bad that maybe both these teams were riding home too much about. But that was one of the great wins that Florida State's had in years. They got to write home about that because that's exactly what they were looking for. And as for Alabama's side, Cade, Alabama is no longer immortal.
Dude, they look soft.
They did. They got pushed around.
Soft. They looked weak. They looked nimble. They looked so frail on the field. There was no toughness. There was no attitude. There was no getting your face on the sidelines. They just let Florida State walk all over them. And shout out to the fans. I think we kind of forget that Florida State and that brand new stadium that just got renovated.
Finally.
One of the greatest college environments, especially with how they intro everything. The tomahawk chop is one of the most iconic symbols in college football, and they showed it last night. And shout out to the fans for still rushing the field, even though the school's going to get fined. I still love it. If it's safe, it's all good for me. One of the best wins for the state of Florida in 2025.
Easy. Yeah, in years for the state of Florida. I mean, just to contextually, think about the context of it all. Alabama, that was the first time that Alabama really got pushed around. And Alabama had a great first drive. They scored early. And you thought this was going to be just, you know, another day at the park for Alabama, and then Florida State's stinking. But to Florida State's credit, they locked everything down defensively. And Alabama had a chance, too, down a touchdown, trying to force a fourth down early in the fourth quarter. And it was forcing a third and 10. And one of Alabama's players hits Thomas Castellanos late when he's already on the ground. Gives them a first down, they go right down the field and score, and basically the game's over after that. If Nick Saban was on that sideline and that kid did that, he would cut his scholarship, he would move him out himself, the movers would be there before he got home. He would get that kid out of school immediately. The one thing about Kalen DeBoer, and Mike Rizzo is a fault of this, Mike Rizzo you could hear with me on Russo and Rizzo, he says that Kalen DeBoer, hot seat, my perspective, and I looked into this because that's as bad of a loss as Bama's had. You could talk about the bowl game last year against Michigan. You could talk about Oklahoma Vanderbilt. Fine. But losing the first game of the season, despite it being on the road, Alabama can't lose that game. His buyout is $70 million. 70. That's the second highest in college football. I lean to the side that not only is Kalen DeBoer maybe not the right fit for Alabama, but I don't think it's fair to try to get him out of town. After a panic loss like this, you get a whole season to be played. You don't need to be undefeated. It's a different age of college football. But Alabama needs to figure something out fast. The fact that they got pushed around, like Cade said, they were soft, and they had a quarterback who has been waiting his turn for about 4 years through five different coaches, and he never got one chance. Kalen DeBoer didn't see a red flag with that. Oh, this coordinator, this coach did not like him. Saban didn't want him. Saban didn't want him to start at least. Oh, this is going to be our guy now. That should have been red flag number one. Ty Simpson was the quarterback in for Alabama, and he did a whole lot of nothing, accomplished nothing. And I got to give Tommy Castellanos credit. You know, the guy, he's got a little Kyler Murray in his game where they kept saying on the broadcast, he's quicker than he is fast, elusive, all over the field. Great at rushing the football. He's a bigger Kyler Murray in a sense. But that kid was electric. Even after the first drive, he was going up to the fans trying to get everybody riled up. He's a showman. So credit to them. Credit to Florida State here because that changes the outlook of their whole season. They got East Texas A&M State coming up next week. They got Kent State, Virginia, and then they got Miami. Miami and Pitt back-to-back. Outside, so from there, Florida State is now knocking on the door as one of the better teams in the ACC. You don't win a game like that and then completely fall flat on your face the rest of the season. They're going to be in the mix. And as for Alabama, I'm not sure where they look from here because what are you going to do? You're going to blame Kalen DeBoer? Is it just Michael Penix is the reason that Kalen DeBoer is any good? Is that it? Was that really the case? Being at Indiana and then He's won everywhere he's went. He was at Fresno State, he won. He was at Washington, he was great. It's very strange to me. And he got his new offensive coordinator, Ryan Grubb, back. Very strange how Alabama has not been able to figure this out. Because he's got the toughest shoes, the hardest shoes. It's like filling in for Coach Krzyzewski at Duke. It's an impossible spot. An impossible spot. There is no level of greatness that you could possibly accomplish that will live up to what Nick Saban left behind. He should know that. I don't know if the boosters are going to know that. They went 9-4 last year. It was a disappointment of a season, ultimately. But now Florida, Alabama, who's got a tough SEC schedule riding, they already got a loss in the win, in the loss column. They're going to have to do some soul searching here because that team's not going to win on talent and talent alone. Talent is distributed more, especially with NIL. It is as distributed as it's ever been. Alabama's not going to be the gauntlet, the Goliath. They're going to need to find something to do, find something to kind of reinvigorate them. The thing about DeBoer that I don't like, and the Norvell is pretty good at, think about invigorating a crowd, invigorating the team. Norvell's animated. He's into it. He's running up and down the field. He's very active. DeBoer is just sitting there, blank face, 1,000-yard stare, not a vocal leader. Saban would lose his mind on the sidelines. Smart loses his mind on the sidelines. Even Ryan Day loses his mind on the sidelines. DeBoer doesn't do that. One of the great wins for Florida, the state of Florida. I'm going to steal that. The state of Florida in years. For football, not Florida basketball, but for Florida State winning that game against Alabama. This knocks them off the throne of being that big, scary Alabama, and this gets Florida State coming off a 2-10 nightmare season back into the thick of things, showing that they can still be the great program that they once were. How about that?
I'm going to go back to what you were talking about, Kalen DeBoer, about how he doesn't have to be or he's not going to be Nick Saban because Nick Saban set that precedent so high it's unreachable.
It's impossible.
But here's the thing. Mentally, as a coach, you know you're not going to be Nick Saban, but you should try your damn hardest to try and be Nick Saban. This is a program that expects you to be great. This is a program that is expecting championships. You can't walk in and expect to be doing a rebuild season because you're at another school that is trying to be great. You're already great. You have to act like it. DeBoer has shown us nothing that he wants to act like a champion right now. Even in the press conference afterwards, he's like, you know what? You can't give him any leeway early, otherwise you're playing from behind. Yeah, that's on you, my guy. That's not necessarily your team. That is you getting your team ready to get back on that second drive and score again after
they
punch
rattled.
You back in the mouth.
They were rattled. They were rattled, for sure.
You are the leader of mentally keeping your team in the game and getting yourselves back into greatness. I'm with Rizzo on this, where I'm very much done with DeBoer's attitude right now.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
I know financially.
Well, financially, that's one thing. That's Duke. That's Duke of college football. Who are you going to get to go replace him?
Duke just made a Final Four.
I know, well, because Shire's worked out, but I'm just saying, and they had somebody sitting there right there. But point is, if you fire Shire, who are you going to get? Who can handle Duke? Who can handle Alabama? Sarkisian's not leaving. Ryan Day's not leaving. Marcus Freeman.
No one is there who is at that level who can do it. But someone who's new, who you've never heard before, needs to have the mentality that I am going to be the greatest. Not I'm going to take a team and make it good. Because so many teams right now that aren't on that upper echelon are like, you know what? This team hasn't played well in the last few years. I'm going to make you great. No one has been in the position yet. And we just saw it with the New England Patriots, right? No one's been able to work out there either. No one has been in the position where you're taking a historically unprecedented great team and continued that legacy, and someone's got to mentally say, I'm going to do it. And DeBoer so far hasn't.
Yeah, the thing about him is he's trying to float. He's not trying to attack. He's trying to survive. And for some reason, one thing or another, they have the NIL. They have the brand recognition. Sure, they lost guys because of Saban, but they still had a lot of big-time players coming in to transfer there. A lot of pros, too. And for some reason, there's just no life. No life. And I agree, you could blame DeBoer here. DeBoer's probably the primary candidate for the blame. It's a tricky spot in terms of finding an alternative. You can't fire the guy after 1 week. If they come out and say and they finish, 10-2, we're gonna have to be singing a different tune. But not a good start. Not a good start. Not a good start. Alabama should be a little embarrassed, frankly. They should be. Because seeing them getting knocked down from that pedestal felt good as a fan of not Alabama. But it was pathetic. Pathetic. Good for Florida State. Mike Norvell needed that type of win. Get people off his back a little bit. And Thomas Castellanos, get my respect now. You got to give the kid his flowers. I ripped him apart because he was, talking so much about Alabama. I thought Alabama was going to go in and kick the crap out of them. Dead wrong. Dead wrong. Credit to him. Credit to Florida State. Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3. We got to do a headline hierarchy on the flip side. But first, And the NFL news, because the NFL starts on Thursday. Dallas Cowboys are going to look a little bit differently because they got the Philadelphia Eagles in that opening game on Thursday night. And the big story coming out of the end of last week was what was going to happen with Micah Parsons. Jerry Jones came out, said, we're not trading him initially. Micah Parsons says, I want to be traded. Can't reach a deal on the contracts. All of a sudden, Jerry Jones is not talking to the agents. Then in a blockbuster on Thursday, Jerry Jones trades Micah Parsons to the Green Bay Packers in exchange for two first-round picks and defensive tackle Kenny Clark, who is going to be 30 years old this season. A good player. Cade, Micah Parsons to the Green Bay Packers. A-plus move for Green Bay. A-plus move for Dallas. Where would you grade it on either side?
A-plus-plus-plus to infinity for Green Bay. And F, as many as you want to put on there, for the Dallas Cowboys. To me, this is ridiculously one-sided, and anyone who says otherwise, I think, is absurd. So I want to go back to when this actually first broke. You guys were live on Russo and Rizzo, weekdays from 4 to 6, when everything went down, and your initial reaction was fantastic. I'm about to play it in a second. But both Rizzo and C-Cat said that Dallas was doing the right thing. Theo, later the next day, also agreed with Dallas. I don't see any world,
none,
where this is favorable for Dallas or looks good for Dallas at all, and no one else in the sports world is either. Here's just a few. I've been collecting them all weekend.
Oh, you love this. You love getting the audios.
For people who have been reacting. So we'll start here, but this has been fantastic. Not one single former athlete or current analyst. The only one I can find is Cam Newton, and that guy's brain is already messed up anyways. So here are some of my favorite reactions to the Micah Parsons trade.
This is
trade.
From non-ESPN West Palm people that have responded to this trade.
Yes.
Okay.
This is from everyone else in the sports media world. Stephen A. Smith.
This is a disaster for Jerry Jones. This is a bad, bad situation.
Dan Orlovsky.
This will go down as one of the worst trades in the history of their football team and their organization.
Marcus Spears.
Bro, are you kidding me?
Dan Patrick on the Dan Patrick Show.
The Dallas Cowboys, who committed, in my opinion, organizational malpractice yesterday.
Mina Kimes.
Just bluntly, I have yet to hear a coherent football defense of this from Dallas's side.
And this is a good one. This is Chris Long on his podcast.
Did you hear that, guys? Did you hear that? That's the sound of 10,000 TVs getting smashed by Cowboys fans.
And then, by far my favorite, this is your initial reaction on Thursday, Colin, after you give all the details. The first thing you say.
The Cowboys are pathetic. This is a pathetic move.
Still the best I've heard yet. Just blunt, straight up, and you're 100% correct. There is nothing here. Not the actual, only two first-round picks. That's it. You get two picks. Not forget that they're first rounds. Only two picks, and that you just let him have the contract that he wanted, and that you waited until the last second, and that you told nobody, and the fact that you wanted to make it just a personal vendetta for Jerry Jones.
And to an NFC rival.
And according to Adam Schefter, Jerry Jones had a handshake deal with Micah Parsons at the beginning of all of this that was with a five-year, $40.5 million contract. Micah Parsons said, no, I want you to speak with my agent about this, which is what players are supposed to be doing because they'll get the most money. Agents know how to do this. And Jerry Jones apparently gets offended because he just now learned how to deal with players and agents, apparently, and says, I'm not going to talk to you. Now, this is not what happened. But essentially, Jerry Jones and Micah Parsons and his agent all stopped communicating for a full three and a half months while Jerry Jones tries doing a back-end deal with a team. We heard that there were multiple teams who were interested. The Packers obviously got the first in. They talk about it with Micah Parsons. He agrees to the contract. Jerry Jones then agrees to the trade. Why does that all happen to have a say in the back end of things? And then in the press conference, after Jerry Jones trades Micah Parsons, a reporter asks him, why did you not tell everyone that you were interested in trading Micah Parsons? And he says, do you really think I'd let everyone know that we are trading this player? Yeah, because that's how a market works. That's how business works. That's how it's literally an auction. It goes to the highest bidder. And you're just spiteful enough to want to have this all in the media. He wanted everyone to talk about him for a whole summer, which he succeeded in doing because he's Jerry Jones.
Yeah, he's nervous about the image.
And then he finally cuts the rope. And basically, we realize he had been lying to us all summer about what he was thinking, to reveal it all in the end, and it makes him look awful, especially the city of Dallas, the Luka trade, now the Micah Parsons trade. The Packers are getting the biggest steal in this decade. It's unbelievable. I was shocked to see it happen. I've been someone who is saying Jerry Jones will say all of his talk and he'll do it just like he always does with Dak, with CD. It'll somehow happen. And he broke. He broke. Micah Parsons beat Jerry Jones.
Yeah, that was it. He beat him.
And it's unbelievable. Now, I also, one last thing, because I know we got to go to break
soon.
It
is fascinating how the three ESPN, Christian, Kat, Theo Dorsey, and Mike Rizzo were all in favor of Dallas making this move. I very bizarre. I was shocked to hear that when I first heard it. This is a good move for Dallas? What are you talking about? They're trying to win 12 games this year. Why would they get rid of him?
Unbelievable.
For rebuild? Rebuild what? It's going to be pick 29.
Did you hear what Dak... Okay, so Dan Orlovsky on First Take on Friday morning when they talk about this, he gives his initial take. And then his first thing he recommends Dallas to do, get rid of Dak Prescott. Scrap the whole idea of the team and start from scratch. Because that's what you have to do now. Your team is going to be bottom barrel for the next 5 years minimum. And you just gave the Green Bay Packers a straight shot to the Super Bowl for their next decade. Shooting yourself in the foot plus giving help to your enemies.
Yeah, the one thing I'm very confused. If you're going to trade him to the Jets. Trade him to somebody that's not going to deal with the Cowboys for the foreseeable future. Green Bay deals with Dallas every single year, whether in the postseason or in the regular season. I don't know why they would give him to Green Bay. It's like trading anybody. It's not, you can't just talk about interdivision. Interconference is still a big deal because if Micah Parsons and Green Bay are great, and that team won 11 games last year now and lost five divisional games. It went 1-5 in their division. They still won 11 games. And that was with a hurt quarterback basically for half the year. And if Green Bay is able to do that, still being one of the youngest teams in the NFL, and now they're adding a game-changing player defensively. And edge rushers improve a good team to great. They don't make a bad team good, but they can make a good team great. That's exactly what he's going to do. Now, it all relies on the quarterback. You know, if Jordan Love stinks, you're still not going to turn around and say this is a good trade for Dallas. But Green Bay should have made this move 100 times out of 100. Green Bay looks like the absolute winners here. Two first-round picks. Dallas should be lucky if one of those first-round picks make a Pro Bowl. Better yet, get a second contract. And Micah Parsons has three all pros.
Someone said, again, I was searching through all sorts of YouTube videos and getting everyone's reactions. Someone said that 50% of first-round picks are good. I don't know where that stat came from.
Well, and 50% of first-round picks, what do you think the percentage is in the top 15 versus the 15 to 30.
Yeah, exactly.
Packers are not picking in the top. That pick's not going to be top 15. That pick will be 25 through 32 minimum. The very least, you're getting the 30th pick in the draft. Is Micah Parsons going to be hanging around there? No, he's not. The next Micah Parsons? No, he's not. This is a bad move for Dallas. And it's all because the owner was being stubborn. And you can't chalk this up to Jerry being Jerry, because I was even changing my tune about him a little bit because I'm watching the documentary. But you can't do it like this. Not with this timeline. If you're going to trade him in March, set up a bidding war, and go from there.
Now, I also have to bring up one last thing, because another hilarious moment from you guys talking about the Parsons trade on Russo and Rizzo was how you had just talked about it earlier in the show, how you wanted to take the over on the Packers 9.5, correct?
Correct.
Okay. You guys were all explaining like, oh, you just missed it. Brother, let me just play for you something real quick about how desperately you wanted to take their over.
Do we know how good Jordan Love is yet? No. But the fact that he's healthy, I think, will help them. And they got a running game. They got some talent offensively. They got a new rookie receiver that they can play with. There's a speedster, Matthew Golden. Give me the over, Green Bay Packers, 9.5.
Now, you may recognize the music that was on our Blitz the Book on August 3rd.
I just haven't made the pick yet, Cade.
It's been a month.
I made the individual pick. I usually wait till the season starts, or at least close to the season. So I understand, Cade. I got burned here. I don't do it in the beginning of the offseason. If I can avoid it, I don't know if somebody's going to get hurt in training camp. I get screwed here. I understand that. I was in on Green Bay a month and a half ago. But the problem is I was just going to wait to make the pick until I thought it was the right move. And the funny part is I'm looking at Hard Rock Bet now. And you still can't make the pick. You still can't take the win total. They're going to come out and it's going to be 10.5 or 11 flat, and I'm going to be pissed. That's where we're at. I know, Cade. I agree. You don't need to say it. I know.
This is hilarious that you guys were like, oh, you just missed it. I was like, brother, you've been talking about this all month.
No, I missed it a long time ago. I've been in. I was at Machu Picchu. I chose the Packers over on the win total. I didn't take it then. Wow.
I was shocked that everyone else on the show that day, like, you were the only one having to say that the Cowboys were losing their minds. And I was like, yeah, keep it going, brother. I got you.
Yeah, that's surprising. Yeah, I agree. I was surprised as well. That's Kate Chums and Colin Russo. College football is here, which means bowl season is edging closer. The annual Boca Raton Bowl ABC Supply Company Great Chefs Tailgate Showcase heats up on Wednesday, September 10th. From 6 to 8:30 p.m., join ESPN 106.3's Theo Dorsey at Boca Raton Innovation Campus in Boca Raton as dozens of local chefs, breweries, and cocktail masters serve their favorite tailgate classics. Tickets are on sale now, includes all food samplings, entertainment, beer, wine, cocktails, and soft drinks. Visit spiritofgivingnetwork.org/events to purchase your tickets today. That's Kate Chums and Colin Russo. Do a little headline hierarchy on the flip side of Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3.
Punch right, Zach. 15 tip scissors. Can it to 300 jet F stick. X has got a quick high corner. Be ready to keep attacking.
This is Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
Live from the Anna Jar on the Veen Accent Attorney Studios, you've been to car accident, truck accident, suffered a slip and fall. My friends Mark Anna Jar and Glenn Levine at Anna Jar on the Veen Accident Attorneys, they're here to fight for you. They don't charge you unless you win. They work tirelessly to get you the maximum compensation that you deserve. They are the best in the business for a reason. Don't settle for just any attorney. Demand Anna Jar on the Veen today because that's the Anna Jar on the Veen difference. All it takes is that one phone call to take back control of your life. Don't wait. Call for that free consultation today. Call 1-800-747-FREE. 1-800-747-3733. Take back control now with Anna Jar and Levine. Colin Russo, Cade Chumsen. It's Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3. We're streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter /X at ESPN West Palm. Well, it's time for us to... We got a lot of headlines to get to with a packed slate of college football yesterday. And what Cade does is he puts together his headline hierarchy where he gives me five blind ranked. So he gives me five headlines and it is my decision to determine... where they rank in terms of importance, 1 through 5. I get them randomly. I got to do the best I can to make it the best 1 through 5 I possibly can. Let's get to it. The headline hierarchy.
5 mystery storylines from the National Football League.
I thought this would be purposeful on Cade's part.
1 Colin Russo hoping to not bury the lead.
This is not a big time headline.
It's time for the Headline Hierarchy on Sunday Huddle, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
Yes, sir. Let's get to it. The Headline Hierarchy once again, the last one before the NFL starts, and it's all college football. We were just talking about it for the last half hour or so, but Colin, let's go to that Alabama and Florida State game. This, we were talking about how Ryan or... Kalen DeBoer could potentially be on the hot seat. This was your initial comment about DeBoer last Friday on Russo and Rizzo.
Mm-hmm. You can't have a guy replace Saban and then 2 years later lighten up his seat on fire, telling him to hit the road.
I would agree with you, but Kalen DeBoer has now lost to 4 unranked teams in a season and 1 game. Nick Saban did 4 unranked losses in 17 years. Where are we at in the hot seat for DeBoer? And where do you put this outstanding Knowles win on our headline hierarchy?
I mean, if Alabama's going to win 6 games, yeah, you're going to have to move on from him. You're going to have to make a decision there. But you got to see how the season plays out. But this is not a good start. You can't panic and fire him after week 2. That's not fair. You can't do that. That's losing the first game of the season. You don't think the team, if the team gets better, if they, you know, still win 9-10 games, what are we going to do? Get rid of him and do what exactly? Get rid of him to get Glenn Schumann, the defensive coordinator from Georgia. I guess that's the only thing that makes sense. What are you going to go get Lane Kiffin? You're not getting Sarkisian. Marcus Freeman's not leaving Notre Dame for Alabama. You'd only leave for the Ohio State job. Ryan Day's not going anywhere. I mean, who are we going after exactly? Kirby Smart's not leaving. Who's going to take that Alabama? Like, who is that next up and comer? Kurt Cignetti? No, he's got no Southern ties. That doesn't make any sense. Why would you go get him? Hey, you're not going to get Sharon Moore? No. You know who could do it? I don't know if they'd ever do it. John Gruden. John Gruden could do it. You can go get him. But I can't sit here and say it's fair to put a guy in a hot seat after 16 games. I don't think that's fair. After trying to replace the biggest shadow in the history of college football, but it's not going well. It's not going well. Alabama can't win 7 games and get away with it. You could get away with 9. You could do that. You can't get away with 7. Let's see how the Alabama season plays out, but not a good start. I can't say the seat is hot, but you got to imagine that there's some panic from the pressure from those boosters because they expect greatness. This, in terms of a... This is number two. Kalen DeBoer and where he stands in amongst the ranks in Alabama is number two.
Sounds good.
Next up, Texas, Ohio State. 1-3. Arch Manning does absolutely nothing. He looked awful. 37% of his passes were off target, short, long, not even close. Texas loses 7-14 in their opener. Didn't score until the second half of the fourth quarter. You guys talked long and hard about this on Russo and Rizzo on Friday, and I'm sure Rizzo will make sure to pull up whatever he wants to. This is how the whole conversation ended, which I think is hilarious. This is how you wanted to describe this game to finish off the conversation last Friday.
You're talking about beating the best team in the country here.
According to who? A bunch of old guys drinking coffee in the press room?
I mean, Mike, this team can't be that bad. I mean, geez. Are they 16?
They're the favorite in the SEC
for a reason.
Colin, you are the biggest component of Riz. I got to see these teams play. Sitting here telling me, wow, how do we know this stuff yet?
Now, I know you were trolling him the entire time.
The entire show.
But to be fair.
I did think Texas was going to win. Yeah.
Did you see this coming, though?
No. I see. The thing is, Rizzo say, "Well, a bunch of old guys," and then he's sitting here telling me, as an Ohio State fan who doesn't think anything but Ohio State, how we don't have the AP.
The fact that he didn't catch on to the trolling was so funny. You were just dangling it in front of him the entire time.
I told him that Texas was going to, Ohio State was going to score on a safety because the ball is going to fly over the punter's head for Texas in the third quarter, and he didn't like that either.
It could have happened. There were some cases it could have. I was waiting for it.
But this was a shocker. Now, weirdly enough, dare I say it, I wasn't that impressed with either team.
No. Neither team really played well.
I was more impressed, if you want to talk about coming out of the game impressed with both teams, I was more impressed with what LSU and Clemson both looked like comparatively to what Texas and Ohio State both looked like. That was a better environment, but I actually thought that there were flashes offensively on either side from LSU and Clemson that weren't there in the Ohio State and Texas game. But Texas, Manning stunk. Let's call it like we see it. Jeez. I mean, he's sitting there waiting for 2 years to be ready. And then he comes in and he couldn't move the ball. He's a good athlete. There's no doubt about that. He's a good runner. They made it abundantly clear. Gus Johnson couldn't go 5 seconds without talking about how his mother was the athletic side of the family. But coming into this game, this is number one, by the way. Arch Manning and how this Texas team is going to be perceived now. That defense is really good. There's no doubt. That Texas defense is really, really good. Either they don't have the playmakers and they know they don't because they didn't take a lot of chances. They don't have the playmakers and therefore they didn't want to take a lot of shots, or they don't trust Arch Manning to take said shots, which I'm afraid is worse. And I think it's the latter.
I think they were ready to take shots and they saw his first pass go 5 feet short of the receiver and got scared.
Yep, that bootleg pass. It just hit
so bad.
He was 5 yards short.
And I think they saw that and they were like, all right, this kid's not ready. Quintrevion Winsner went for like 16 carries, 80 yards. They just prayed he could get anywhere through in that OSU defense.
It was honestly, I was sitting there like, God, so conservative on a road game like this. Now, the funny part is Texas even had a couple opportunities. Texas gets that fourth down. At the goal line. That's a tie game.
Yeah.
Terrible play call.
But
they had a chance at the end of the game, too, to even tie it up. So if we're going to walk away, Ohio State
wasn't much special either.
Nothing crazy. But you're not walking out of that thinking Ohio State, oh my God, Ohio State, how great are they? No, you're not saying that. Ohio State had their fair share of problems, too, because Texas looked terrible, and they outgained Ohio State substantially in the second half.
Yep.
Quarterback looked terrible. And they outgained them. It's just they couldn't convert in the red zone. That's exactly what killed Texas last year. Now, Ohio State's defense is great, and Texas's defense is great, and the offense is always, every year, take a couple weeks to really get their footing. But I didn't come away overly shocked, impressed with either of those two teams. I thought LSU and Clemson both looked more impressive than either of those two teams in what I saw in the night game. This is number one.
All right, again, on Friday, talking through the college football slate, let's go to that LSU-Clemson game. Now, granted, you said even though you picked national champion as Clemson,
yep,
even though you picked Cade Klubnik as your Heisman Trophy winner,
right,
you did admit that this game on Saturday was a toss-up between LSU and Clemson, LSU coming into rival territory and really wanting that week one win. However, you did say just one quick comment that I want you to then follow up on.
The thing is, I trust the teams where I actually know something. I know something about Clemson.
What was that you said you know about Clemson, and did you see it on Saturday night?
Well, what I knew about Clemson is that they have a great defense because they got a lot of those guys returning. And what I did know about Clemson is I like the quarterback. Now, I'll admit, Klubnik, especially in that second half, the quarterback at Clemson, he had a bad second half. He had a good first half. That touchdown drive they had in the second quarter where he took him right down the field, that was a Heisman drive for me. I was ready to crown him. Then he sort of just hit a wall. And it's credit to LSU's defense as well, because that Clemson offensive line did him no favors. They have no running backs. They had a receiver starting at running back. What did I see from Clemson, though? I saw that defense is really, really good. So at least they're going to be fine in that regard. And they didn't need that game. You know who didn't need that game? And that's why I got nervous about I wouldn't touch Clemson there.
Mm-hmm.
LSU needed that game. And you got the sense that they needed that game. That was an emotional, spiritual victory for them. And for a team that had the worst defense in the SEC last year, you got to give everybody involved, Dylan Baker, the new defensive coordinator, complete credit, because that defense was the highlight of the entire day. That defense was unbelievably good. And they completely shut Clemson down, especially in that second half. Now, Clemson even had a chance to take him down the field. They were flying down the field with an opportunity to tie it at the end of the game, and LSU shut them down. But the thing about it is all the Heisman hopefuls, none of them played great. None of them. Zero.
Which is what I said might happen this entire season.
None of them played well. I mean, Arch Manning did nothing. Even Garrett Nussmeier didn't do a ton. Cade Klubnik did nothing. Cade Klubnik did not do nothing, but Jeremiah Smith did nothing. Kid from Alabama did nothing. You can't make a determination on, Georgia and Michigan, all those teams, but nobody took any sort of crown. It's too early to say, but this LSU win, how big it is for them, and, Clemson losing at home like that, this is number three.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's get into some other games that weren't necessarily on the premier docket, but you said you were very interested in the Tennessee-Syracuse game. Wrong emphasis there. Tennessee Volunteers, Syracuse Orange. Tennessee wins it 45-26 in Atlanta for the Aflac Kickoff Classic. What'd you think from the Volunteers?
Tennessee blitzed them immediately. Their speed and size was apparent right from the get-go. And I like Syracuse because I like the coach, Fran Brown, the guy who they got from Georgia 2 years ago. But coming in, and I like the quarterback, Steve Angeli, because that's the guy who came in at the end of the first half in the Orange Bowl when Riley Leonard was banged up. And Steve Angeli took them down the field and got Notre Dame points, which, in my opinion, gave Notre Dame a good leg up in capitalizing on a second half. And that was the backup for Riley Leonard last year at Notre Dame. And he was a starter, so I actually liked him too. Tennessee looked good. Not going to lie, it's a good coach, Josh Heupel. And that offensively, they showed a lot. That quarterback who they got from App State last year, Joey Aguilar, they didn't seem like they were missing Nico Yamaleva. So from there, I thought Syracuse would, hang around. And they had a couple opportunities. They got the ball down 18. They were driving. They had a bad fumble, which kind of killed the game from there. But outside of that, this Tennessee team is actually pretty good. Beating an ACC school like that, by 28 points, got to mean something. I'm not ready to declare them anything, but Tennessee had a good showing yesterday, and that was the other game I was interested in. Do I put this at 5? Do I put this at 4? Wasn't that dramatic? I don't think there's that many dramatic games outside of that have already happened. Now, if you do Miami Notre Dame, I'd be screwed. I'm gonna put this tentatively. I'm gonna put this at 5.
Well, you called it. Let's talk about that Notre Dame-Miami game coming in tonight. Well done. The last of our three top 10 matchups for the week. We're seeing some brand new squads on these Irish and Hurricanes. What do you want to see from tonight?
I'm going to the game. I'll be in Hard Rock for it. I think Notre Dame's going to win. But granted, I haven't been right on any of these picks. You know, I thought Clemson was going to win. I was dead wrong.
Dude,
I thought Texas
Army
was
losing
win.
Too.
Army lost to Tarleton State. Army, who was undefeated and they killed everybody, lost to Tarleton State. Come on, give me a break. That's why it's impossible to make college football picks week one, because you have no idea about any of these teams. We have no idea. There's 100 new players on each of these teams. I mean, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to think? So now that I can start watching these teams, you can start making more educated assumptions. But I'm getting screwed with my picks. So I chose Notre Dame. Congratulations to Miami for winning this one. Congratulations to Miami. But I would say, still, I'm going to stick to my guns. I think Notre Dame will win. I think it will be hopefully close. I'm rooting for a close game. There was three total games in FBS that were within one score yesterday. I just want a close game. That's all I want. I think South Carolina is going to blow the doors off of Virginia Tech, which is a 3:30 game today. I just want a close game. This is number four, though.
I think you nailed the headline hierarchy, though. Texas, Ohio State, Florida State, Alabama, LSU, Clemson, Notre Dame, Miami tonight, Tennessee, Syracuse. Well done.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad indeed. If you open up your ESPN app, if you wanted to check the scores throughout the day yesterday, you might notice that the ESPN app looks a little different. That's because it is. The ESPN direct-to-consumer content officially launched. And what does that mean? Now you can go to the ESPN app, you can sign up, and boom, you get a bunch of different accesses. You could access your app and control your TV. You can multi-view on the TV, watch multiple games, multiple events at once. That means Monday Night Football, college football, NBA, WNBA, college hoops, you name it. All in one spot, and you can check out the new Verts feature. This is one of my favorite things that ESPN's done in a long time. The Verts feature, think of it like any other social media, but what it is it's catered to you and your sports liking. So whatever your teams are, whoever your favorites that you list on the app are, let's say you're a Oakland A's fan, but you're also a Florida State fan. You could scroll. Boom, here's a video of what happened in the Florida State-Alabama game. Boom, you scroll again. Oh, the A's lost? All right, here's what happened in the A's game. Oh, you're a Met fan too? Here's what happened in the Met game. It's all catered to you, and it's all sports-driven. It's perfect because you also get the TV shows on top of that. So you get First Take, you get your Sports Center fix, you get your 30 for 30. You got it all in one spot. Don't miss the championship moment on the ESPN app today with their new direct-to-consumer content and their new app launching. That is, of course, excluding cable providers and cable subscriptions. But that's new ESPN. Sign up today. Kate Chums and Colin Russo, we got a Blitz the Book on the flip side. It's Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3.
Smash, F-Track, sneak on one, alert, a smash on one, ready?
This is Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
Colin Russo, Cade Chumson with you. It's our Blitz the Book presented by Hard Rock Bet. Go download the app today on the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. You got baseball season, which is entering the last about month, 6 weeks of the season. And you could get started to do player props, player picks. You could do game by game, inning by inning, live betting. They have it all on the Hard Rock Bet app. It's the best because it caters to both types of players. If you're the brand new type of player that doesn't really know how to navigate a sports book, boom, it's easy to get acclimated. It's easy to get involved on Hard Rock, and it's easy to figure out. But if you're also an experienced gambler and you want to put a lot of money, get intricate with your picks, do a little parlays, promo boosts, profit boosts, get tricky with it. But you could do that on the app as well. It caters to the new player and the experienced player. That's why the app and the interface is as good as it possibly gets. You get college football back. Of course, we had a packed week one yesterday. And you get the NFL starting on Thursday. You could place your futures now. Don't make the same mistake I did and miss out on the Packers over on the win total. But you could do it all on the Hard Rock Bet. Check out the Discover page as well to see promo boosts and profit boosts. Get $150 in bonus bets if you deposit just $5 today on the app. It's offered by the Seminole Tribal Florida. Must be 21 plus. Physically present in Florida the wager. Terms and conditions apply. Consider by gambling. Call 1-888. Admit it. All right, Kate, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take four games. We're going to take the Miami Notre Dame game tonight. We're going to take TCU North Carolina tomorrow night. We're going to take the NFL opener on Thursday. That's Eagles Cowboys. And then Chiefs Chargers, the game in Sao Paulo on Friday. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right, you start us off with the game tonight, Miami Notre Dame. Who you have?
Give me the U, plus 115.
I'm going to take Notre Dame minus 2.5 here. Not just straight. I'm going to take it minus 2.5.
Yeah, I'm just taking it straight up.
I'm taking it against the spread. All right, TCU, North Carolina tomorrow night. TCU is favored by 3.5 points here. What do you say?
I'll go UNC straight up, plus 140. Give me Coach getting his first win.
I'm going to take UNC straight up as well. I mean, the fact we talk about not knowing anything about the teams. That is the top of the list. All right, NFL, you got two games this week, including and especially the Eagles-Cowboys opening night. The Eagles are a 7-point favorite. Cade, what do you say?
Give me Eagles minus 7.
I'm going to take Eagles minus 7 as well.
Minus 115, yeah.
I'm going to take Eagles minus 7 as well. Kansas City and the Chargers. The Chargers are getting 3 points here against Kansas City. What say you?
I got a fun one for you. I'm going to take the Chargers plus 3 at minus 105. You could take it on its own, but I'm going to say the Chiefs outright. Give me like a 24-23 final score. If you parlay Chiefs outright with the Chargers plus 3 to like give it exact, it's plus 750.
Yeah, the thing is, I think this is going to be a 3-point game. So I think they're going to push. How do I even root for that? Unless I find some sort of avenue to get a game special. But for me, this is going to be a low-scoring affair. Can I take the under instead? 45.5, or should I take a team
straight up?
That's
probably true. No, you're good. Take that. That's a really good one.
I'm going to take the under 45.5. This game has 17s, 20s written all over it. Give me under 45.5. Chiefs, Chargers. That's over in Sao Paulo as well. So last year, that was a very good game between the Eagles and the Packers, a game which Jordan Love got hurt, but it was a bad field. It wasn't great, to be completely honest with you. But the Chiefs and the Chargers, the Chiefs are always going to keep it low scoring. They're going to figure out how to win at the end of the game. And those divisional games are always dogfights. All right, that closes us out. What was the score between our baseball picks? Do you have that there?
Our baseball, you had a pretty good week last week. I'm at 11-21. You finished at 14-18. So neither of us know baseball, but you did a little bit better.
Yeah, both did poor. Both did poor. Big thanks to Cade for keeping us up over the air today. Check out Sunday Huddle on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, all those great places to catch the full program or watch it back on ESPN West Palm on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter/X. We got a full week of individual programming outside of tomorrow, of course, for Labor Day. Enjoy the holiday. Enjoy the football. Enjoy all the fun. We'll be back at it next week. I won't be back at it, but Brian Rhodes will be filling in. It's Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet right here on ESPN 106.3.
The preceding program was paid for in full by Hard Rock Bet. Advice and opinions expressed during this program were solely those of the guests or hosts of this program and not of ESPN 106.3 or Good Karma Brands.